Sharmani Didi, July 11th, Glastonbury.
Krishnaya Krishna Bhaktaya Pada Bhaktaya Namo Namah Yam Pravrajanta Manapetam Apetam Krityam Dvaipayano Virakakaru Vajuhava Putre Jitam Mayataya Taravoganidus Tam sarva bhuta hridayam muni manatosmi bhaktya vihinaya parada lakshay chittasya kamadi taranga madhye kripa mayi tvam sharanam prapadram vrinde namaste Charanaravindam Tvaivasmi Nachivami tam vina Iti vigyaya radhe Tam dharmam sharanantike First I offer my unlimited obeisances in the dust of the lotus feet of my most worshipable Diksha Gurudev Nichalila Pravishta Om Vishnupada Astotarasatshi Shrimad Srila Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada and the same unlimited obeisances and the dust of the lotus feet of my most worshipable Shiksha Gurudev. Om Vishnupada Astotarasatshi Shrimad Srila Bhakti Vedanta Narayan Goswami Maharaj to all of our disciplic succession and all the assembled devotees. So I'm very happy to see you all again and new guests as well. Very happy to see you. So.
I'm just going to say, if you could open this
door. Oh, yeah. Well,
good. Lots of people won't get to see
good.
That.
Yeah, very, very important. Because I'm also going to do some show and tell, which is even smaller than the screen. And that's important to everybody's close. Yeah, as close as you can in life.
Oh, that's good. We need to sit in fourth.
Yeah,
that's good.
So this morning we discussed.
Is that going to be? I might affect. Some people might. Is that too much in your face? Maybe. No, they need them to. Something. It doesn't bother them. It's okay.
So this morning we discussed some of the philosophy and meanings of the paintings that we did under the guidance of our Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, and as a platform for discussing the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, because when we have the platform that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we have faith in that, the Kriti Tam Brajabhadir Idam Jalishnu. Srila Sukadeva Goswami, at the beginning of his talks on Rasa Leela, Krishna's divine dance with the gopis, just at the beginning of his talks about Rasa Leela to King Parikit, because there were many sages, there were thousands of sages there actually, even many who came from different planets just to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he was concerned that those who were not ready to hear might misunderstand and thus not get the opportunity to advance in bhakti by hearing. So he explained that one who hears about the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis, particularly the Rasa Leela pastime, which is the highest of all, with faith that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and under proper guidance of self-realized souls in disciplic succession, for him, and who then explains it, for him, prema bhakti, or braj bhakti, the highest divine love that the human living entity can experience, enters the heart, and all the diseases of the heart, like lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, and envy, disappear from the heart. So we discussed some platform philosophy this morning, and then we showed a few paintings that was done under Gurudev's guidance, and we left off at a cliffhanger, which I forgot what it was. I hope somebody remind me. And then tonight, as I mentioned this morning, tonight we're going to be discussing more paintings, that is, using the paintings as a platform for discussing the divine pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the gopis in Vrindavan, and also the deep divine philosophy behind that. So sometimes I'll be speaking from the slides, and sometimes, and I'm glad that you came forward, and if you like, you can come more forward, because sometimes I'm going to be showing pictures from the book, which is going to be really hard to see if you're right up there. So, Gopi Geet is the one of the five Ras Panchajai, one of the five life heirs, supreme life heirs of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam was written in his trance, in his trance of Bhakti Yoga, his Samadhi trance of Bhakti Yoga. In his maturity, it was written by the literary incarnation of Krishna, named Srila Dwaipayana Veda Vyas, or for short, Srila Vyasadeva. And he had already compiled, written all the other Vedic literatures, the Mahabharata, which had the Bhagavad Gita in it, all the Puranas, the Upanishads, the Vedanta Sutra, the original Veda, and the four Vedas that were expansions of that. Everything was done by him, but still he wasn't feeling satisfied. So Narada Muni, the eternal spaceman, who can travel all over this universe and many universes simply playing his veena and chanting Hare Krishna, who happens to be the spiritual master, came and told him that the reason for his dissatisfaction is because he didn't write about the particular pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan to give the highest blessings to the fortunate humanity. He told Vyasadeva, so you've written about Varnashram, you've written about so many incarnations, you've written about how to get to the heavenly planets, you've written about the impersonal Brahman, you've done so many things, but have you written about how Mother Yasoda twists Krishna's ear when he's naughty and she chastises him and Krishna weeps? No, Gurudev, I haven't done that. Then what have you done? Have you written that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose mere plenary portion breathes in and out innumerable universes, how that same Supreme Personality falls at the feet of Srimati Radhika, the highest gopi and his dear most beloved, falls at her feet and begs for forgiveness? No, Gurudev, I haven't written that because I haven't realized it. Then what have you done? You've done nothing. So you should go into a trance, a meditative trance of bhakti yoga, and then you'll see all those pastimes in your heart, A to Z, Krishna's appearance to his disappearance, and then you can write. So then there's one verse glorifying, just after Narada leaves, there's one verse glorifying what Vyasadeva was just about to do, which goes like this. Anartham upasamam shakshat bhakti yogam madhoksaje lokasya janata vidvams chakre satvata samhita. All the world's problems, all the world's problems can be solved in an instant by the process of bhakti yoga, pure bhakti yoga. But the whole world does not know this. And therefore, the great sage Vyasadeva, in his maturity, has compiled that scripture in the mode of pure goodness. As we discussed this morning, there's different siddhantas, different philosophical conclusions for different levels of aspirants, and also for the same spiritual aspirant at different times in his sojourn in bhakti. So, similarly, there are many scriptures, some for those in the mode of ignorance to elevate them, some for those in the mode of passion to elevate them, some for those in the mode of goodness to elevate them. But Srimad Bhagavatam is for those in pure goodness, and even those who are not in pure goodness, like when we first started reading it, we were just drugged out LSD hippies in the 60s, who Prabhupada gave his Srimad Bhagavatam to. It quickly brings one to the platform of pure goodness, at which stage one can realize the Lord in his heart and everywhere. There's a very nice verse describing, it's the second verse. This morning we discussed the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, and the second verse, very beautiful. Dharma prochita kaita votra paramo nimatsaranam satam vedyam vastu vamatra vastu shivadam tapachayonamulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parayarishvara Sagyo Vijavarujate Jakritibi Shushu Shubhistakshana. The Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for those devotees who are free from envy and pure at heart. And for those who aren't wannabe, it brings one to that stage, because Srimad Bhagavatam is only understandable by those devotees. The Srimad Bhagavatam reveals the highest truth, which is distinguished from the illusion for the welfare of all. And such truth uproots the threefold miseries. Anyone who submissively gives his attention to the Srimad Bhagavatam, which was written, I'm just reciting the verse now, which is written by Srila Vyasadeva in his maturity, becomes free from all contamination of the heart. And for him, quickly, the Lord becomes established in the heart and cannot escape. The devotee actually captures him in the core of his heart. So this Gopi Gita is one of the five chapters in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the five life heirs. That is, it's all the rest of Srimad Bhagavatam is given to us so that we could gradually understand those earlier cantos and chapters, so that we could gradually understand these five chapters, which is the whole purpose, really, of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the whole purpose of all the Vedas. And the Gopi Gita is the most important of those chapters. Sometimes Gurudev says one of, and sometimes he says the most. But either way, you can imagine its importance. So, we have some Gopi Gita that we brought here. And if you like, you can see Vasanti at the end of the program, and she'll give you. So, it opens when the gopis are, it's very important to understand who gopis are. Gopi means, it's come from the word, Sanskrit word gupta, which means hidden. Hidden in the heart of the highest aspect, of the highest feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is Brajendra Nandan Shyam Sundar Krishna, is the gopis. Without the gopis, and particularly without the principal gopi from whom all of the gopis manifest, Srimati Radhika, without Radhika at his side, Krishna is Nirvishesh Brahma. He becomes the qualityless, formless, impersonal absolute truth. Krishna is Bhagavan. He's known as Bhagavan. Bhagavan, quickly translated into English, means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But as Srila Prabhupada and Gurudev etymologically explains the word, it's Bhagavan. Van means one who possesses, and Bhagya means fortune. So there are six fortunes: all strength, all wealth, all knowledge, all beauty, and all renunciation. That's what makes somebody God, if they have all of those six things. So he's called Sri Bhagavan. We've all heard that expression, Sri Bhagavan. So that Sri is short for, Sri means Lakshmi. As you know, Lakshmi is also called Sri. And Radhika, Srimati Radhika, is Sarva Lakshmi Mayi. That means all the Lakshmis, there are infinite Lakshmis, because there are infinite Vaikuntha planets, or spiritual planets, which are, no beginning, middle, or end to the size of these planets. Infinite planets. infinite planets. And also, Vaikuntha means without anxiety. So in all these planets, there's unlimited bliss and no anxiety. So presiding over each Vaikuntha planet is Lord Narayan, Krishna's plenary portion, and Lakshmi is his power, his potency. So there are infinite Lakshmis, and all of them are within Radharani, who's their source, just as Krishna is the source of the unlimited incarnations. So when we hear Sri Bhagavan, that is because Srimati Radhika is at his side, otherwise he wouldn't be Bhagavan, he would be Nirvishesh Brahma. So the gopis, all the other gopis, are expansions of her moods of service to Krishna. So they're all very mighty and powerful. Even Krishna's mother is so powerful. Just like, Krishna is unlimited, right? So he can drink an unlimited amount of milk. So as a baby, he's drinking the breast milk of his mother, but he never comes to a satiation. Because just as his thirst is unlimited, because everything about him is unlimited, Mother Yasoda's milk in her breast is also unlimited. So he never gets frustrated that his thirst is unlimited, but there's not an unlimited supply of milk. And in this material universe, there's a spiritual planet called Swetadweep, where this morning you met Supersoul, who is situated in everyone's heart. And that same Supersoul, that small fraction of Krishna, who's situated in the heart of every living being and controlling our remembering and our forgetfulness, and who's acting as the witness of our activities in our past lives that give us the next life. So that same Supersoul, he has his own abode high up in this universe, but it's a spiritual abode. It's called Swetadweep. And there, the Lord lies down in an ocean of milk called the Puridak Ocean. So that whole ocean of milk, which is unlimited miles long, and then the Lord lies down on the bed of Shesha, who we discussed this morning, Ananta, Shesh, that Naga, transcendental serpent who has unlimited hoods that acts as an umbrella for Lord Vishnu to lie down on. That ocean of milk is one drop of Mother Yasoda's milk ocean. Everything comes from Vrindavan. Just like the Arjuna that you know from Bhagavad Gita, he's an expansion of the Arjuna in Vrindavan, who's Krishna's cowherd boyfriend. And all the queens in Dwarka are all expansions of Radharani and the Gopis in Vrindavan. So everything ultimately has its source there. I forgot why I mentioned that. Why did I mention that?
Because that Krishna has the Gopis in his heart.
Right, that Krishna has the Gopis in his heart. And there was something else. Did it go all the way back there? Right, okay, thank you. So,
what does
and,
Gopi mean?
Huh?
What does, we're explaining what who the Gopis are. Yeah.
Well, the etymology is from Gupta, which means hidden. So the Gopis are hidden in Krishna's heart. Krishna is hidden in their heart, and they're his power. So when Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill with his left finger, the pinky of his left finger, which means way on his left side, it's because Radharani stands on his left side as his power. And really she, by her power, she lifts Govardhan Hill. He lifts Govardhan Hill. So, go means cow. Cow, land, senses, but particularly it means cow. And the Gopis are the cowherd maidens. And the highest aspect of God, according to the Vedic literatures, is as a cowherd boy. That's what God likes to do in his most intimate feature, which is his complete feature, and all the other features of God are plenary portions or portions of plenary portions of that. Like, for example, somebody is a judge. That's his job. He's a judge, high court judge. And everybody at work calls him Your Honor. And then he has some friends who know him more intimately, and they call him John. And then there are he has a child who knows him much more intimately, who'll even ride piggyback on him and say, "Giddy up, horse, giddy up." And he calls him Daddy. And then his wife has a more intimate relationship with him and knows him in different ways that none of the other aforementioned personalities know him, and she calls him Sweetie. So this is an analogy to show something about the different levels of intimacy of Krishna. So his highest feature, which is his complete feature, is Krishna as the beloved of the gopis and particularly Srimati Radhika. And his highest feature is as a coward boy. That's what he likes to do. That's what God likes to do best. Herd cows. Why does he like to herd cows? Because that gives him an opportunity to leave his palace and have beautiful pastimes with gopis. Because it wouldn't be possible in his house. Because the gopis are apparently young, married girls, and Krishna is their paramour. So you can't just, associate with your paramour in your parents' house. So Krishna is a coward boy, so that he gets to go out cowherding, and he loves the cows because they help him get out. So he personally milks them, and he pets them and embraces them. He loves them so much. And also, when he comes home with them at night, the dust from the calves, there's millions of cows, billions of cows at Krishna's and his friends' herds, and he goes out with billions of coward boys too. Everything about him is unlimited. But still, it's not that, people feel like they're weighing back. Because he's so complete that he can give himself completely to one person and remain complete to the next person. So even the coward boys and cows that are in the back, they feel like they're up front with Krishna. And they are. Same thing with Guru. Even though Guru may have, the bona fide Guru may have millions of disciples, he can be fully with each one of them, whether they are physically in the same room as him or on the other side of the planet. So the gopis are the cowherd lovers of Krishna. And he also has gopa, their gopis. He also has gopa friends or cowherd boyfriends. And there are elderly gopis, like Krishna's mother and all the mothers of all the cowherd boys and girls. And then the gopis that we're going to be speaking about are the young teenage cowherd girls who are apparently paramours of Krishna, but actually they're Krishna's power and energy. That's not so interesting to God, that he just already has everything. But he wants to have to work hard to get something, because that's what makes it worthwhile, isn't it? And if you're doing risks, that's what makes you exciting. And if you have a girlfriend who's married to somebody else, that's super exciting, because you have to hide and, everything is like a magic experience. And the wife is serving her husband better than another wife who doesn't have a paramour, so that he'll never suspect anything, but she's always thinking, how am I going to meet my lover tonight? So why do these things all happen in this world? Because it's a perverted, everything in this world is a perverted reflection of that world. And Gurudev said, the more we hear about that world, the more we realize that everything here is a perverted reflection. So that's why the gopis and Krishna have that paramour relationship, because of the risk element. Otherwise, he also has 16,000 queens in Dwarka, and they also worship him with awe and reverence, because not only is he their husband, and in the Vedic culture, the husband is revered, but they also know partially that he's God. Partially he's their husband, and partially they know that he's God. So therefore there's a little bit of a distance due to the conception of his greatness. But the gopis have no conception. He's simply the son of Mother Yasoda, and he's our beloved. So the gopis, before they were married, they performed worship, as you see here. They went to bathe in the Jamuna, and they did worship of this deity, Katyayini, who is, you could say externally she's Durga, but the gopis worshipped her as Yogamaya, as we discussed this morning. Durga is the shadow, this material, the personified material energy is the shadow of Yogamaya, Krishna's transcendental desire potency, who makes things happen, makes Krishna forget that he's God, makes everybody dance in the Rasa Leela. She was the one who, even though Krishna's parents wanted to marry Radha and Krishna, because they, Yasoda wanted nothing more than to have Radharani as her daughter-in-law, but Yogamaya, who's Krishna's desire potency, but he forgets that. By his desire potency, he forgets that. And to him and everybody else in Vrindavan, she's the great lady sage who everybody takes advice from. She's also an astrologer. So she told Krishna's mother and father, Yasoda and Nanda Baba, that the stars, and Mother Yasoda already got everything ready, all the arrangements, giving jewels to Radharani's parents, you know, for the dowry, and was even putting some yellow substance on Radharani's hand, which is what they have when they're going to get married. So then, Yogamaya, who's called Purnamasi in Vrindavan, she told Krishna's parents that the stars say that it's not a good match, especially at this time. So don't do it, and so they listened to her. So then they became the paramour lovers. But actually, she's Krishna's Shakti or potency, and actually, they're eternally one. They're one soul and two bodies, or one stem with two flowers, blue and yellow. Krishna is bluish, like a fresh rain cloud, and she's golden, like molten gold. So there's one verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Radha and Krishna are one. In fact, Radharani is, what is that? Krishna's pastimes are a manifestation of his internal potency, and that is Radharani. She is responsible for all of his pastimes happening. She's his Ladini Shakti, or his bliss potency within him. And she's also his Parashakti or Swarup Shakti, his complete intrinsic internal potency, from which all other potencies come, from whom all other potencies come. But to enjoy pastimes together, they became two, and then they came together as one again, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Krishna, although he's God, there are three desires that he has that were unfulfilled. How could God have any unfulfilled desire? Everything he desires is simultaneously fulfilled at the same second that he desires it. We have to go out and look for what we desire, but for him it's all happening at the same time. But there are three desires that he couldn't fulfill. One is, what is the nature of Radharani's love that drives me mad, even though I'm the controller of everything? That's number one. Number two, what is it? There are four qualities in me that even I don't relish and taste, because I can't experience them in me, that drives her mad. So there must be something about me that I don't know about. Something about my qualities, my flute playing, my form, the sweetness of my form, the sweetness of my qualities, the sweetness of my pastimes, like that. And the third was, what is the quality of her happiness that's 10,000 times even greater than my happiness? And I'm the embodiment of happiness. But she is his Lanini Shakti, or she is his happiness, the power of his happiness. So, in order to understand that, he couldn't understand it as Krishna, so he asked her to borrow her mood and her complexion, which she said, yes, I'll do that, you can borrow it, and you can come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but I'm also going to have to help you out, even when you're Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Lalita, my dear most Saki, she'll come as Swarup Damodar, and my other dear most Saki, Vishaka, my other most intimate gopi friend, she'll come as Rai Ramananda, and they'll both train you and come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and I will personally come as Gadadhar Pandit and help you out. Mm-hmm. So they're one, they become two for pastimes and one again, so that Krishna can understand her. So here, this is how Gopi Geet starts. This is before Gopi Geet, which leads us up to Gopi Geet. That was a long introduction, I know. So they're worshipping Kakyayani and to get Krishna as a husband. So in the meantime, well, then on the last day, they wanted really good association. So they called the already married gopis, Radharani and Lalita and Vishaka, to come and be with them on this last day. So they're all praying. And then Krishna, as the mischievous coward boy, Paramore, he climbs up on a tree, and the gopis were bathing without any clothes on because they're in a separate part of the lake and there's no guys there, so it doesn't matter. So Krishna went up on a tree, brought all their clothes up on the tree, and he told them that I will fulfill your desire next year to be with me like a husband and be intimate with me. So the next year, there was the autumn night, the first night of autumn, called Sharad season. And in the autumn, the moon fills the whole sky red. Everything becomes bathed in red. And Krishna, because the highest feature of God is this lover, as a lover, beloved of the gopis, Krishna, seeing the sky, you know, like whatever you are, that's what everything reminds you of. You know what I mean? Reminds you of what you're already absorbed in. So, because Krishna's absorbed in that way. When he saw the moon painting the whole sky red, he thought, well, the moon is actually my ancestor because I'm a descendant of the moon god. Krishna's coming in the dynasty from the moon god. So my ancestor is really inspiring me here because he has a wife who's one of the directions, but he has a beloved who's the eastern horizon. Oh, the, is it the ocean? What's the, I forget. So some aspect of nature is the wife of the moon. But the paramour of the moon is the eastern direction. So he's going now to his paramour and putting kumkum on her face, kumkum decorations on her face. And that's how she got red. So I should take inspiration from my ancestor. And I should, at this time, fulfill the desire of the gopis, which is also my desire. So then, it's stated in that verse, Bhagavan api, he means although. Although he's Bhagavan, he totally forgot that. In Vrindavan, he always forgets that. And he began to play his flute to call the gopis. Then, as you can see, he's playing his flute in the forest. Then, meanwhile, all the gopis are in the middle of their household affairs. Somebody's milking a cow, somebody's feeding her husband, somebody's taking care of a neighbor's child. Some of them are partially dressed. Some of them are partially made up with makeup, like the kajal is only on one eye. So then when they all heard, some of them were baking bread in the oven. And so when they heard Krishna's flute, each one of them thought that Krishna's calling only me. Because even though he gives himself fully to one, he's there fully for the next. So they all rushed out and left everything right in the middle. A lot of times people say, well, I can't take the bhakti because. Or I say, if I'm chanting my rounds, I'm thinking, I can't pay attention to my rounds because I'm too absorbed in thinking of my problems, which I have to solve by thinking of them, which is impossible. So we always have some reason that we're in the middle of something or other that we can't absorb ourselves in Krishna consciousness. So the gopis are the best example of not considering anything important except their relationship with Krishna, which is actually the only thing that's important for any living entity. Because we're all part of Krishna. Just like all my parts of the body are part of my body. And if one part of the body wants to feed another part, my hand wants to feed the other hand, both hands kind of die out. But if one hand, wanting to help the other hand, feeds the stomach, then automatically that other hand and all the parts of the body are nourished. So the gopis aren't interested in watering the fruits and flowers of the tree. They're interested in watering the root of the tree. And that's why the gopis have become so great that just by hearing about them, just by hearing their songs, the whole universe becomes purified because they think about that. They're not interested in putting food in the ear or in the eye. They're interested in feeding the stomach, and that way the whole universe gets nourished. So here they are, leaving everything in the middle, and they put they're in such a hurry, they put the top part of their clothes on the bottom and the bottom part on the top, and their waist thing around their neck, and they just ran. And then then they began the Ras Lila with Krishna. And then, in the middle of Ras Lila, Radharani's noticing that, well, all the gopis actually, there are billions of gopis, and they're all thinking that Krishna is just dancing with me alone. because he's always with every gopi. But why is he with every gopi? Because he's running so fast. See my hand? It looks like it's everywhere, isn't it? My finger? But it's not. Doesn't it look like it's everywhere?
Not quite.
Huh? So, it's not. It's going fast. So similarly, Krishna was dancing so fast around all those billions of gopis that it seemed like he was with each of them at all the time. So they were all happy, but Radharani, she's alert and she can't be fooled. So, because she is Krishna's alertness. She's the embodiment of Krishna's alertness. So she knew what was happening. He's dancing with me, saying I'm his most beloved, but I see he's doing the same thing with everybody. So she, as you can see here, walked out. Next. So in this Gopi Geet, there are 19 verses, and then the 20th verse is when Krishna comes back. Well, Gopi Geet means the song of the gopis' separation from Krishna. And this song purifies the entire universe. So for every verse, there's a pull quote and a picture that... Oh, great. Perfect. This temple has everything. It has a pull quote and a picture that matches the exact verse, like here's Radharani walking out of the Rasa dance. And the verse, this is the introduction. And Krishna's up there in a tree. So then, and also, the book has the picture that you just saw as a pullout. It's an activities book for the kids. What's your name?
Gemma,
okay. So then, here are, then in verse 1, okay. So then, when Radharani left, Krishna also left the Rasa Leela, because he can't be with all the gopis and not Radharani. So the whole Rasa Leela stopped, and billions of gopis are searching for Krishna. And you can see that each verse has a color strip that goes with the particular mood of that particular verse. And every once in a while, there's a painting that shows what's going on in a particular verse. And every once in a while, there's another pull out. This one I'll show you in bigness on the screen. So, and then in the back is a really great part of it, because in the back there's a CD of one of the gopis chanting live with Indian music, singing the whole Gopi Geet with Indian music and all kinds of instrumentation. And that gopi has come to this material world in the form of a sadhak, or a raganuga bhakti practitioner, and that is Srila Gurudev. When I first asked Srila Gurudev to sing Gopi Geet for the book, he said, there are so many better singers than me that you could ask, so many, you know, kirtaniyas. And he sang it. So I said, yeah, but we need a gopi to sing it. So then he finally sang it, and one of his sannyasis, Muni Maharaj, was very expert at singing all these geets with musical backgrounds. He made very beautiful music to it. And then Gurudev was giving a couple of lectures on Gopi Geet and the glory of Srimati Radhika as essential for our existence. And that's one of those lectures is also accompanied by the Indian music. It's very mood-filled. So then the gopis were all searching for Krishna, and they became so absorbed in their search. Like, you know when you're... Have you ever seen a man with a dog and he looks just like his dog walking down the street? because of his absorption in the dog, he starts looking like him. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever one thinks about is absorbed in at the time of death, he gets that kind of body. So the gopis are so absorbed in searching for Krishna, because he left following Radharani, because she left, that they started, and they're so absorbed in his pastimes, and we used to do this together, and we did that, and then that happened. And I remember when Krishna killed the Putana witch, and when he lifted the hill. So they became so absorbed in remembering his pastimes that they actually started thinking they were him. They actually became what's called tadatma with him, or they merged into his existence, and he merged into their existence. So one of the pastimes that they were imitating was Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. Look at me, see, I'm Krishna, and I'm lifting the hill. So she took her veil top and, you know, held up, pretending that it was a hill. So Gurudev explains, and that's also in the book, that actually the gopis could have lifted the real Govardhan Hill because they are Krishna's power. And it was by the gopis' power that Krishna was able to lift Govardhan Hill and hold it. The big giant mountain. Just held it up for 7 days. So that picture is also there, and you'll also see it on the screen. So they were imitating his pastimes, and they were just becoming mad with transcendental grief, which is another kind of ecstasy, as we explained this morning. Finally, they realized that we're not going to be able to get Krishna to hear us. Because there's so many trees blocking our voice. So if we go out to the bank of the Jamuna, where it's wide open space, then our voice will go far, far, far. But Krishna wasn't very far away. Because you know how guys are that, like, they'll hide just so they can hear the girls talking about them? So where does that start with? It starts with Janmat Yasi Yataha. Everything has its origin in the Absolute Truth. Only here it's full of iniquities, and there it's pure, pristine, eternal. Here, everything is as it is there, but there's a but. Like, it's a nice day, but it will end. It's a nice day, but it will rain. A nice day, but I will die. It's always a but there's no buts. And somebody was asking this morning, is that you, Yasoda? Or somebody was asking this morning that in the beginning of creation was everything is beautiful.
Yeah. I was asking that basically your pictures are showing us the essence of
can everybody hear the lullaby from way back there? Mm-hmm. You all hear that?
I was saying about the pictures that Shamarani paints of the spiritual world, like the sacred conch, and you know how beautiful it is, and we can see the essence of the spiritual world. And I was asking, before you know we started destroying this material world here, was it like that here?
Okay.
Yeah, was it as beautiful with all the flowers, you know, and everything, jungly, and or was it always plain?
It was much more beautiful,
yeah.
Until even Vrindavan, as it is now, was much more beautiful 500 years ago, and much more beautiful a thousand years ago. As Kali Yuga progresses, and as man does his thing, the beauty degrades. Just like even in Glastonbury, something was nice and then they build a smoke-filled factory. But it was always the perverted reflection, even from the beginning, even in its most beautiful time, it's still only a perverted reflection of the reality. But it was just like you see beautiful things now in nature. Like when I was coming here on the road, who were taking pictures of the very beautiful hills for a painting that another devotee is going to do. And the hills were just like stunning. But still, it's only a perverted reflection of the reality, like a reflection of a beautiful tree with fruits and flowers reflected in a muddy river. So we can imagine, or can't imagine, how that is. It's like this. Has anybody here not tasted a rasagula? Has anybody here not tasted a rasagula, an Indian rasagula? Not. Raise your hands who have not tasted a rasagula. Okay. Now, rasagula is one of the most famous Indian sweets, and it's fabulously tasteful. And I'm going to describe it to you. You've never tasted it. So, a rasagula is about the size of a ping pong ball. Those of you who you have tasted it, right?
Yeah. We just eat the sweet.
Yeah.
We don't know the name.
Okay.
We just eat.
So, it's about the size of a ping pong ball. It has the consistency of a sponge. It drips down the side of your mouth when you try to swallow it. They explode in your mouth. They taste like a kind of like a combination of a honey and an apple with a tiny touch of carob. And what else is that?
It's brown.
Huh? Very
it's
juicy.
Brown.
And
it's
whitish brown.
No, rascal is
white. It's white. It's round, like a ping pong ball.
It's round and white. No, it's a sweet.
Oh, but I've been wanting to
see some brown.
Okay.
Did I say glove humans?
No,
it's a rascal.
Rascal.
But is it like.
No. It's something like a brethren, but it's different. So, does that give you any idea what a rasagula is like? No. Until you taste it, then you'll know what a rasagula is. So, you've all seen jackfruit, right? Anybody not seen a jackfruit? Jackfruit is a really fantastic. A vegetable, but it's called a jackfruit.
Did you ever have
it?
Lots of fruit, isn't it?
You don't like it? Did you ever have a good fried Filipino? Okay, I'm going to describe a jackfruit. Jackfruit looks like a punched-in basketball. It has the consistency, the surface is like a man with a five-day-old beard that he hasn't shaved, all like an alligator skin. Inside, the consistency is like a soft boiled, it's like the goo of an egg. And it tastes like a combination of a potato and honey.
Smells like garlic?
Oh, that's
great.
Smells like garlic.
Oh, yeah, I know the ones.
You'll have to go to the Philippines. The Philippines, you love it. Depends on how it's cooked. But anyway, you don't get much of an idea of that unless you've seen it. And now you don't like it because you've tasted it. So you've realized the jackfruit. But although I've realized the jackfruit, and I'm trying to explain it with my realization, the people who have not experienced the jackfruit don't know what I'm talking about.
Can't imagine it looking like a punched-in basketball.
Can't imagine. That's what it's like. And the same thing with the rasagula. Unless you've tasted it, you can't imagine. You know, I'm self-realizing a rasagula. So we can't imagine what the spiritual world is like when we say it has beautiful flowers, or even if we paint it. Even the painting is just a shadow indication. You can't imagine what it's like until we're there. So therefore, our Guru Parampara gives us the process to actually experience it. Does that help with anything?
How to taste it?
How to taste it?
Yeah.
By the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, pure chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, pure tasting of Krishna Prasadam, purely surrendering our whole life to the service of Guru, bona fide Guru, reading with heart, and prayer, and the scriptures, things like that. Observing Ekadasi, the Lord's birthday, Janmashtami, properly glorifying and remembering the pure devotees in the Guru Parampara, praying for their mercy, like that. Praying, doing the bhajans for service to Radharani and Krishna. Well, I'm Amma, I don't know about anybody else. So the gopis have gone to the Jamuna. But Krishna's not really far away. He's hiding in a kunj, in a secluded grove, and hearing everything that they're talking about. Just like, again, the guy who is hiding so that he can hear what the girls say about him. So that's how we got to that. It's a reflection of the reality. So the gopis say in the first verse that this is Radharani leaving the Rasa Lila. We already discussed that somewhat. Okay, so then in the first verse, the gopis are saying that this land of Vrindavan has become very beautiful ever since your birth, because Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, has personally gone there to sweep it and decorate it. And everybody, also because of her presence, and because of your birth, everybody in Vrindavan is happy, except for us. We, who dedicated our life for you, we're the only ones that are unhappy. Why? Because now we're feeling separation for you, and we're about to die at the next moment. So actually, you might say, well, you just said the gopis are selfless. Why are they worried about, Krishna has to be there for them? Are they self-centered or something? The actual reality is that because they know Krishna better than anybody, because they're hidden in his heart, and he's hidden in their heart. Because when things are hidden, then it becomes more interesting, isn't it? So they know Krishna better than anybody, and they know that Krishna can't live without them. So they know that Krishna is feeling intense separation for them, and that puts that feeling in them. And then they go mad how to alleviate or pacify his desire to be with them. And so that brings them to the point of death to satisfy him. But prema is crooked. It's not straight. If it's straight, then it's not the highest prema. Just like it's paramour. Really, they're his shakti, they're his power, but it's coming in the form of they're his paramour. So also their dealings with each other are never straight. For example, suppose you come to my house and I tell you that you're my friend, you come to my house and I say, just for you, I went shopping and I got all the sweets and everything that you like. And just for you, I want you to know that I did all the special cooking just for you. So really, I want you to appreciate me. And therefore, my prema goes down, my love goes down. It's not real love. But if you come to my house, even though I did do everything for you, I say, oh, just coincidentally, I made all these things. I didn't do it for you, but I just happened to have made them. So I'm not trying to bring the attention to myself, but really, I did go all totally out of my way. My friend. So praying is crooked. So the gopis can't tell Krishna that you're dying without us and therefore we're looking for you. Rather they say, we're dying. So Krishna says, oh, you're dying for me? Oh, okay. Just to make him feel good. So then in the second verse, the gopis say, and it's very, very deep and intricate, I'm just giving like nothing. Like a skeleton outline, so nothing. So then in the second verse, they say that, what can we do? You played your flute, and your flute music went into all of our houses, and we were happily engaged in our household activities. And then your flute stole our heart, and you stole all of our desire for chastity, because in the Indian Vedic culture, chastity of a woman is the highest, like, glorification of a woman. So you stole that. You stole all of our chastity to our husband. You stole by consideration of what society is going to think about us, we stole all of our shyness and shame. And shyness is also a great quality for a lady. So you stole all of that, and you've taken it with you, and then we came to get it back, and then you danced with us, and then just as we were about to reach the height of our enjoyment, you completely disappeared. So how do we know you're capable of doing that? Because we see already what you've done. We see that the lotus flower, which used to be very beautiful, has now become dim in comparison to your lotus eyes. Why? Because you glanced over the lotus flowers. Not only the lotus flowers, but the lotus flowers that were deep. And you'll see it in here in verse 2. You see a very beautiful line drawing, and then a very beautiful painting of lotus flowers very deep in the water, like the middle part of the water. So where nobody could even go to get a lotus flower, you simply looked at those lotus flowers and you stole their beauty. How do we know you stole it? Because now your lotus-shaped eyes are so beautiful, and by comparison to that, the lotuses sort of have become dim, dull, not so beautiful in comparison to your eyes. So if you could do that, and you have so many qualities, your eyes have so many qualities, just like the lotus. That's how we know you stole it. You stole everything. In fact, everything you have, you've stolen. Your complexion is stolen from the fresh rain cloud. Everything you have is stolen from somebody else. You always used to steal butter from the elderly gopis. So there are so many qualities you have that are like a lotus because you stole it. Your eyes have one quality that the lotus flowers don't have. Now what's that? Anything they look at, just by looking at it, they can steal that thing. So since you're able to do that, we can understand how it was very easily able to, you were able to steal our hearts, which were so carefully protected by our chastity. So please come to us immediately before we die and give us back our hearts that you've stolen. Then in the third verse, and this is the whole quote and the line drawing in the Gopi Geet book, in the third verse, which is that you protected us so many times over the years since you were a child. You protected us from the rain of Indra, which came down as thick as pillars and as sharp as arrows. At that time, you lifted Govardhan Hill with the pinky of your left hand, and just as an umbrella over the whole Vrindavan, and you gave us so much protection. Next, and when there was a great forest fire, and this is the, it's not such a good photo, but this is the line drawing picture that we did under Gurudev's guidance. Our team did this line drawing, which tomorrow we're going to give a presentation of the boss reliefs and line drawings that were done under Gurudev's guidance for this Govardhan temple. So anyway, so this is the line drawing, very long, beautiful. So we took one strip out of that to put in that particular verse where the gopis said you protected us in so many ways. Next. So also you protected us from the great forest fire. You swallowed up the forest fire just like that. So, and you did so many, you protected us from so many demons. But what's the use of having protected us then if you're killing us now by this separation? Because you glanced at us, and by your glance you've stolen our hearts. So, isn't killing with a glance also known as murder? Can't that also be considered murder if somebody knows how to kill with their glance? So by your eyes, you showed us that you have a unlimited desire to enjoy pastimes with us. And because we always want to fulfill your desire, and that's our only longing, your desire to enjoy amorous sports with us entered our hearts. And now we have that burning desire, although we were fine before. And so our only ambition at this moment is to pacify you and bring down that desire, fulfill it. But you're not here. They didn't say that with words. I'm saying it with words. Those are their moods. And those moods that are behind their words are all told here in the spoken heat. Because Gurudev is giving lectures. He gave lectures in 1990 and 91 on this subject to the ISKCON GBC members when they used to come to him and inquire him, asking him to tell them the Ras Panchajaya chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam and Brahma Samhita and Jiva Dharma. So many books he discussed with them. So this book as well. So Gurudev was giving lectures on the commentaries of Srila Viswanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami, which are telling the deep moods of the gopis behind what their words are, and how there are different kinds of gopis with different kinds of moods, the right wing, the middle ones, the left wing, like Radharani and her party. And so there's just like layers and layers of meanings and deepness that hit the heart of the devoted reader, or make the undevoted reader devoted. It goes that far. Sorry?
I say careful, don't read these books.
Yeah, careful, don't read these books. Actually, Srila Rupa Goswami, thank you Maharaj for that, because Srila Rupa Goswami wrote one poetry in the mood of one gopi talking to her other gopi friend. Remember, they're all externally married. So she's saying, don't go to the Jamuna. Why? Because that Krishna is standing there. Don't go where Krishna is standing underneath the moonlight in a threefold bending form and playing his flute. Why shouldn't I go? Because if you go, then you'll forget all your society, friendship, and love. And you'll become mad. So that was the third verse in a shortcut nutshell, I thought I would say. And in the fourth verse, this is the painting. See, we took a lot of strips. As I said, each verse has a strip in the verse. And so we went to my DVT paintings, the paintings that I did for Prabhupada's books, and also the ones for Gurudev's books. And like sliced it to make the strip. I showed you what the strips look like. Like here's the strip. Mm. So this is a full painting, then we just took the Vishnu part of it, the super soul. This is the same super soul that we were discussing this morning. So the gopis are saying in the fourth verse that actually you can't, there's no way that you could be the son of Mother Yasoda, because you did all these marvelous feats of lifting mountains and swallowing fires. And therefore, because you did all these amazing things, then you must be the super soul who's sitting in the hearts of all living beings. And how did you get here? What are you doing here in this world? Brahma prayed to you for to come here and protect the universe from going to hellish planets, so that if everybody would worship you, then they could, you know, get liberated. And you have taken birth, therefore, on the prayer of Brahma. Brahma is the chief demigod and the first created being. But because of his prayers you came. And therefore you've taken birth in the dynasty of pure devotees. That's the verse. Those are the external words. But then there's so many deep moods there that were partially given to us by the previous acharyas and their commentaries of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Gurudev opened those doors more in his lecture. So you have, first there's nothing. The gopis perform their hidden pastimes, their Gupta pastimes with Krishna, and nobody knew. And then Srila Vyasadeva taught this to his son, Sukadeva Goswami. And then Sukadeva Goswami spoke it to the king, Parikit, in front of all these sages, so many thousands of sages from all over the universe. And the verses that Sukadeva Goswami spoke, I mean, he wasn't speaking verses, he was just speaking, and then it became verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That was pretty closed. So then, our line, the line of Rupa Goswami, who knows everything best because he's Rupa Manjari, as we discussed this morning, those in the line of Rupa Goswami opened up the meanings by telling us the deep moods of the gopis. Within that, opened up the door a little more, and then Gurudev opened it up more by explaining the commentaries of the acharyas and then giving his own bhavanuvad. Bhavanuvad means, bhav means mood, transcendental mood, and anuvad means translation. So when Gurudev is giving the translation in his own book, and then also even further in his lecture, spoken lecture, it means that he's giving the translation of the acharya's moods in their commenting on the verse mixed with his own moods. So the previous acharya's moods are mixed with Gurudev's moods, and that's called a bhavanuvad, and that's what Gurudev wrote in Hindi. Now that it's in Hindi, and gradually it will be translated into English. But the lectures are also Gurudev Bhavanuvad's spoken, so it comes out even more. So what the gopis really mean is that you couldn't be the son of Mother Yasoda because Mother Yasoda is so kind. Even if a cow got a little cut, she would immediately give all of her attention to help that cow. She would weep for the cow, but you're so cruel that here we are dying. We'll be dead in the next minute. We're just in our last breath. And you couldn't even care less. If you cared, you would come. So, then, why did Brahma call you? I'm just giving like one little atom of what's in the book. Why did Brahma really call you? Because Brahma has the same desire as you. His desire is that he created this material universe so that everyone would suffer. Because you also love to see people suffer. That's the one quality about you that's... You have a lot of qualities, and one of them is that you like to see people suffer. Otherwise, you'd be here right now. But you'll never find anybody who'll suffer for you like us. And that's why we don't die. Otherwise, we would be dead. But since our life was given to you, our lives are... And you're so happy to see us suffering. This is like a mind twister type of thing. You're so happy to see us suffering. But because our lives are within you, because we're so absorbed in you, our lives are situated in you. Otherwise, they would have been burnt long ago. But now our lives are living very happily, are like theirs, are living very happily in you. Get it? But now we've come to a point where you can go on with all of our life airs in you. You can go on having a long life because we're just about to go now. We can't tolerate it any longer, the separation. We can't imagine such love and separation. Can't even imagine it. It's so high that it appears like nothing. You know what I mean? Actually, Brahma has the same mood as you. He created this material world so that people will suffer. And that's why he had you come as a coward boy who has relations with other men's wives so that nobody will worship you because they'll think, who wants to worship a debauchee? And then everyone will go to hell, and that's what you want, right? So, and as I said, that's only an atom of it. But then there are other many, many people. So then it goes on. And all these talks of the gopis' feeling of separation and their deep moods of chastising Krishna and accusing Krishna, Krishna just loves that like anything. He loves that much more than the glorifications in the Vedas of all the great sages saying how great you are and how you breathe in and out the universes. And then the next verse they're saying that, so please put your lotus hand we just cut out the Krishna part for the strip. This is Krishna accusing Radharani. This is another time. And the gopis are remembering all these pastimes. And so all these pastimes, like Krishna's accusing Radharani. So I see that you're stealing flowers from my Vrindavan garden. Who are you anyway? And she says, you know how girls and boys who like each other and they don't want to admit it, they just talk about nothing? Sweet nothing, it says. So he's saying, so who are you who's stealing all the flowers from my Vrindavan garden? Who am I? You don't know who I am? Then he says, if I knew who you were, would I be asking you who you are? Then she says, oh, so you say this is your Vrindavan garden? Did you plant any of the flowers here? Or did your father plant any of the flowers here? It was actually my Saki, Vrinda Devi, who's the personification of Vrindavan, who planted all these flowers. So then he said, well, Vrinda Devi is actually my wife, so whatever belongs to her belongs to us. So then the gopis called in Vrinda Devi, and Vrinda Devi said, are you married him? Did you expect me to marry him? Anyway, so many beautiful pastimes, and now, which were happy at the time, now the gopis are remembering the same pastimes, which are like death. You know how if you have, like your mother died and then you're thinking about all the nice things you did together, but in the same pastimes are now the source of grief. So where does it come from? Janmadhyaya Sutta, everything has its uninebriated origin in the absolute. So they're saying that, so like they're remembering this pastime also. This is Radha Krishna and Vrindavan after they bathe and splashed around in the Jamuna. And they come out and their sakis and maidservants, the mantris, dress them and ornament them and dry them. Very intimate services. Put on the unguents, decorations, and then feed them. If they're going to feed them in that little house, or they'll have a picnic out in the grass. And then the mantris taste the remnants. But when they're tasting the remnants, because the remnants were chewed by Krishna and then Radha, all the moods of Radha and Krishna when they were tasting the prasadam, which is all, they're all discussing their pastime with each other, or they're thinking about their pastimes with each other. So all the moods are in the prasadam. So then when the manjaris take those remnants, then they're experiencing all the pastimes and all the moods in their very body. And all the feelings that Radharani was feeling, a touch of it. Because nobody can be exactly like Radharani, but a touch of that, which is like the highest ecstatic love. I mean, it's not even words. Anyway, so the manjaris, they experience a touch of that. And so when they taste the prasadam, they're tasting all that. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tasted the prasadam, when he was here 500 years ago, he was in the mood of the gopis. Are you leaving? He's leaving to get prasadam. Are you going?
No.
You're coming back. Okay, otherwise we'll give you some prasadam to take. Okay. So, where were you? Right. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's Krishna in the mood of Radha, when he tasted the prasadam at Jagannath Puri 500 years ago, being in the mood of Radha, he started dancing in ecstasy. Because he's tasting, just like Radharani tastes, that this prasadam is the nectar from Krishna's lips. The same nectar that goes into this flute playing, that enchants all the gopis to leave their homes right in the middle of everything. That same nectar from his lips chewed the prasadam. So that when Radharani takes the prasadam, she's actually tasting Krishna and Krishna's love that's in his heart. And then the manjaris, they taste all that. And then that the manjaris, they come out in the form of the pure devotees in this world, and then they distribute the prasadam to us. So the taking of prasadam, that's why I said when you asked how do we get there, proper taking of prasadam. With the meditation. So and then offering it with the proper words. So this is called utter amrita, or the nectar of Krishna's lips, which the gopis are begging Krishna for in their gopi deeds. But they don't want, just like we're satisfied with prasadam, or the animals may, in Vrindavan may be satisfied to hear the flute playing, the cows may be satisfied, or the coward boys, which is also Krishna's utter amrita, the nectar from his lips. But the gopis, now in this song of separation, they only want the direct utter amrita. They don't want anything that came from them. So they're giving Krishna the highest happiness. Because their love makes him forget himself, makes him go into this such a highest ecstasy that he forgets who he is, where he is, what he is. And then the love that they both experience, Krishna and Radha, and then their expansion of the gopis, that love becomes the controller of all of them. Mm-hmm. You can't imagine what love is. I mean, I'm saying words, but it's just like a combination of syllables. Mm-hmm. When Srila Gurudev says words, or Srila Prabhupada, or any pure devotee says words, they're not just giving information or combining syllables like I am, but they're actually giving the substance, the seed of the substance that they're speaking, because they're realizing it, in the heart, and that starts growing. That's why it's important to, as much as possible, hear directly from the pure devotee, and as much as possible, be in his presence, and if not, then when we're reading his books, or hearing his tapes, or seeing his movies, to pray that please be there, in the book or in the movie. And please give me the deepest understanding of what I'm reading or hearing so that I can come out in the, as a servant of Radha Krishna and a pure servant of you. So these are just some of the other pastimes of Krishna and the gopis that the gopis are remembering in their modes of separation. What time is it?
10:09.
What time? Oh, you wanted to stop at
9.
Okay. So we're just going to very quickly go through the figures and then just ask a couple of questions. And can you call when it's 9? Okay.
Sorry.
There's a funny story about this. Okay. Is this also the remembering?
The other one.
What other one?
Skip.
The remembering. And this is the gopis and the modes of separation. That is also in the
book.
They're asking the trees and they're asking the flowers and the tulsi plants and the deer. Have you seen Krishna? Have you seen Krishna? And since nobody's answering them, obviously, then they make up the reasons. As we discussed, as Gurudev said, as it's in the Bhagavatam, everybody sees the world according to his own rules. So because they're slowly doing the conjugal relationship with Krishna, they're thinking that everybody has that relationship. So if they're talking to the tree and the tree doesn't answer, they say, well, of course, the tree's a male, so they're on Krishna's side. And if it's a creeper, who's a female, and the creeper doesn't answer, then they say, well, of course she doesn't answer because Krishna just passed by and touched her, and that made her blossom all these new flowers, and therefore she's too shy to speak. So like that, they're conjecturing. But the thing about the gopis is that because they're also expansions of God, they're also God, the feminine counterpart of God, their conjectures are reality. It's like whatever God thinks is reality. God says, let there be light, and there's light, like that. Okay. So this is some of their remembrances. When it happened, it was great. And when Krishna said to Radharani, I love you so much, that made her so happy. But when she hears from somebody else that Krishna said he loves you the most and he's not there, that same sentence fills her with grief. And here's another that you're remembering. This we'll talk about tomorrow, because we're running out of time today. But this is one of the pictures in Gopi Gita. Tell the story tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And this is also one of the scripts. Gopagopa. These are all the strips or the painting in Gopagopa. And here's where they're imitating Krishna. So you see in the back, one of them is playing the flute. See how beautifully I play my flute. And this one is lifting Govardhan Hill. See how I'm lifting Govardhan Hill. And the one that's dancing on top of the other one, one of them is playing the Kali serpent. And that's why her cloth is looking like the serpent's mouth. And the other one is dancing. That's Krishna.
What's the one on the floor?
Huh? The one on the floor she's crawling is baby Krishna crawling.
Okay, let's go.
And one of them is is Krishna's killing the Bakasura demon, you know, the crane by splitting open his mouth. He was a big giant demon. You see the gopis doing that, and the other one is like a bird. And then there's Madhya Yasoda binding Krishna. And Vaino Geet will tell about it tomorrow. This is another strip. This one of the strips.
Again? No.
Oh. And there's one more.
Where Manjus?
Where'd Manjus go? There's one that wasn't done by me, but it's done by Gurudev's disciple Manjari, although I helped her with it. She actually designed the strips, only one strip, as a template. And then myself and Gurudev's disciple, who's a graphic designer, turned it into what you see in the book. Very excellent graphic design with the painting. So this one was done by Manjari. You saw the G clay this morning. Mm-hmm. And this is when Krishna comes back, to make a long story short. And I helped her with this. And Saraswati also helped her. Saraswati did the same. Tonight so beautiful. See those beautiful lotuses with the lotus, big lotus leaves, and also the trees, the leaves in the trees. Saraswati did that.
Yeah.
And that's a pullout, a threefold pullout in the book. The real one is smaller than this. Maybe it's half the size.
What's it called?
What's that called?
The picture.
A gopi gi. You've got a picture for the gopi. Huh? I'm just trying to find it. And here's the picture of the book as it pulled out.
She's asking what's going to explain about this picture.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And also, this morning I mentioned this book, Gauravani Pacharini. I only have one copy.
Yeah.
It looks like a one of those palm leaf books.
Yeah.
And it's very, very beautiful lectures by Gurudev about the Prabhupada that everybody knew and the Prabhupada that nobody knew. Mm-hmm. The secret Prabhupada. He actually came to give Manjari Bhav, and he is Manjari and his other form. So if any one person would like this, it's available. It's simply stunning. And this also in the back, it has another thing. It doesn't have a set of CD, but it has, see, it's a letter?
Mm-hmm.
A letter from the olden days? There's a letter from Prabhupada's Gurudev in here with the original Bengali and the translation of the other side.
Yeah,
I have it, but I just... So we have one of these and about 25 of these if anybody's interested. Okay, so any one or two questions?
Is it,
loud?
Yeah. indicate a color tone at all?
Well, the color tones are indicated by the story itself. As I mentioned, the the moon made the whole sky red, so you see everything is bathed in red.
Mm.
And of course, our Gurudev teaches that Radharani wears the blue, like we discussed this morning. She only wants to wear blue. And the red of her skirt represents Anurag. Anurag is red. Anurag means extreme attachment to Krishna.
Wow.
So everything that she is and everything that she wears represents some aspect of her love for Krishna. As we mentioned earlier, her hair is black, of course. Her thoughts are all Krishna. And I'll tell the story more of what's happening tomorrow morning. Or the leftover ones will be tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
Any last question? Okay, then we'll end here and have a kirtan and then prasadam.
Just to remind to everyone, after it's a prasad we're giving in the kitchen. So welcome to receive some prasad, and also it's in the kitchen and here is some role to collect some donations to all these beautiful people coming to give the knowledge and to Marani to travel and give the knowledge and support what she's doing. So with this donation we can support also the devotees to come in and give the knowledge. So please be generous on this.
Actually, speaking of the donation, anybody who gives a donation on our travels, for our travels, Gurudev personally paid for the Santi's ticket, so the money goes directly back to Gurudev.
Great, that's a blessing, so thank you for that.
So it'll be like direct service to Gurudev.
Yeah, a direct service.
Oh, also, for anybody who hasn't met the Santi this morning,
a lot of Gurudev's lectures are transcribed and sent to a very big mailing list. So if you'd like to be on that mailing list and get the written lectures, then you automatically also get movies like you just in Italy. So if you were on the mailing list,